Hi, welcome to Chosen Voices, a podcast created by Chosen Vessels, seeking to encourage, equip, and empower leaders in ministry around the globe. I'm your host, Becca Baxter, and this is Chosen Voices. Today on the podcast is someone who's been an incredibly influential person in my life, but also a very important voice in the lives of many. Robert McClendon obtained his master's in professional counseling from Liberty University, has served in various ministry roles, is a husband to Kristen, and a dear friend to many. He is the perfect person for this conversation because without his influence in my own life and the influence of his wife, Kristen, I don't think I'd be in this seat or that Chosen Vessels would be what it is today. So thank you, Robert, for pushing me to work harder, deal with my junk, and pursue the Lord's heart. Here's my conversation with Robert McClendon about dealing with trauma on the mission field and about a thousand other things, too. Hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the podcast, Robert. Thanks for taking time out of your day to come and chat with me.
So happy to be here.
I'm so happy for you to be here. So would you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. So my name is Robert. I am currently, I'm unemployed right now thanks to COVID. I just fell out of my chair, but thanks to COVID. Was a youth pastor for several years, was a missions coordinator for several years, and worked with students and teens for 15-ish years. And then in the last year, made a transition working for a corporate office in the Atlanta area. And then once COVID hit, things kind of shut down, and so I was released from that position, and I'm now starting back that position, working with some supply chain and IT departments at a large corporate entity here in Atlanta. Starting in just a little bit.
So big change.
Big change. Always moving.
Yeah. So you are the perfect person to have this conversation with because today we're going to talk about dealing with trauma on the mission field. And why I asked you to come, which you already know, but telling others, is because you walked a long road with me dealing with my own personal trauma serving on the mission field. And if it weren't for your willingness and Kristen's willingness to sit with me in some really hard seasons, I don't think I'd be sitting where I am today. So I'm really grateful for that. And so I'm really excited to talk to you about this today.
Awesome. Excited to be here. This will be fun.
So you talked about being, did you say missions director? That was the official title.
It was a missions coordinator.
Sorry, they're very different.
Not
they're very different.
One's in charge and one just kind of does the administrative work.
So with cross-cultural missions, cross-cultural service, things can get kind of messy because we're all broken people dealing with our own mess, serving others that have their own mess. You know, we're all just doing the best we can. And so specifically for our leaders, what I've heard a lot of people say are things like dealing with grief over things they never thought they'd have to deal with, like leaving their families, but also walking, you know, in the call God has for you, or dealing with hurtful systems that are in place in missions organizations, because surprise, there's still issues in organizations that serve the Lord. And so, what would you say in your personal experience, you've seen some of the bigger challenges that can cause little t trauma on the mission field?
I think the problem with any, you know, organization, even church or entity is that people are involved. And anytime people are involved, we all experience different things and stories and traumas. And even out of the purest of situations, you know, something can go awry, something can be misinterpreted or not thought through. And unfortunately, when things aren't strategized, or when the experience just isn't there, people can get hurt. And you learn from those things, obviously. And so I think that's what makes great leaders, like those who have had the experience, those who've walked through the trauma and the issues and can now go into some preventative measures and make things better for those going into certain experiences and then there's also supernatural intervention where God gives wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, there's like kind of what you said. I remember a professor one time said that President Obama, President Trump, you, me, the pastor of the church, and the murderer in jail or we're all fearfully and wonderfully made, and we all need healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will all walk through these levels of healing for sure. And so whether it's little T trauma or big T trauma, mm-hmm. there will always be this journey through the calling that God has us to.
Yeah.
And I think trauma shapes you. And if you want to define trauma, there's a difference in the people call it crisis. Some people call it trauma. Like a crisis has a weird way of working itself out. Mm-hmm. Trauma has a weird way of redefining who you are. Mm-hmm. And are you going to move on from these things? You know, a financial crisis means that, you know, finances will get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The trauma is when someone loses a restaurant or a business that's been in their family for years, and now they have to re-identify who they are and how they're going to go through life and their children's legacy now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a difference. And so we all experience crisis. And the good news is that those things have a tendency of shaping us, but working themselves out. And trauma is where you have to kind of do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what you asked, but that's what I said. So.
No, that's great. That's awesome. It's important that we define that for sure. So let's start with preparing to go on the mission field. If you think that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of as someone is thinking either, let's talk specifically maybe about long-term missions, if that's okay, or intermediate term missions. So someone's made a 2-year commitment somewhere.
Okay.
And so they're preparing to go and serve under an organization in X, Y, and Z country. It can be wherever. What are some steps that someone should take on the front end of serving cross-culturally to kind of prepare for those shifts and changes and potential trauma?
That's good. To prepare for potential trauma. I think it's like anything. You need to study for the test before it gets here, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you just walk into it blindly, you're not going to have the right answers at the right time. And so for someone going cross-cultural, especially, do your homework. Figure out, you know, where you're going. Don't just, you know, I feel like the Lord's leading me to China. That's great, but they may want to send you home when you get there because you have a Bible in your backpack,
mm-hmm.
right? So do your homework. Figure out the cultural context with which you're going to be. And hopefully if you're going with an organization, they've got things in place to help you. And I know some certain organizations want to send you to a school first. That's because you're not as smart as you think you are. And you feel like you have it figured out. This is what God's called you to. That's great. Learn the language, you know, because you're not going to be able to witness to people if they don't understand the hand motions you're trying to get across to them.
Mm-hmm.
And figure out the barriers, figure out the cultural context. If you don't, some countries you don't stop and talk about this person's dog, goat, friend, neighbor, and you just go right into what God has for them. They won't even care what you have to say because you've already offended them by not wanting to know more about them up front.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding the cultural context, do your homework. If you're leading someone in that area, then be sure they're briefed, like let them know what they're walking into.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be surprises and your expectations are always going to shift based on your reality, but someone should know if they're walking into a sticky situation, they should know that up front.
Mm-hmm.
You should be prepared for that. So a lot of what we call trauma, I guess, can be prevented on the front end by good briefing. And that's probably all across those who go long-term, those who go short-term, or those intermediate trips. And I think one important thing people should know before they go on an intermediate trip is Biola University did a study and put out this article, and it said that those who have the hardest time coming home from the mission field are those who have gone between 6 months and 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time they come home, they've just become like established in the context where they are. They've just learned the language enough in that area, on that street, to go to the marketplace, to make life work.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they come back, everything is different again. It's a quick change back. And you know, it changes for age groups. Those who go on short-term mission trips don't experience that. They've gone to the market with an interpreter who made things happen for them, and they were able to get their soda or a trinket or whatever and then go back home. Those who go long-term, by the time that it comes time for them to come home, they've gone through the process of preparing for that. And so those who I've seen experience the most trauma are those 6 to 18 month commitments that come back and things have changed. And this culture that they've gone so deep in has now been taken away somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new norm. So, again, does that answer the question you just asked me?
Yeah, I think
okay.
so. That's great.
I'm going on tangents, and I apologize.
No, we're all here for this. So talking about that kind of, so short term, there is a certain level of culture shock that's possible on a short term trip, even if you have, you know, interpreters X, Y, and Z. But when we're looking at intermediate timeframes for trips, reverse culture shock is something that I hear about often. And so, like you're saying, you know, this getting used to a new culture, getting infiltrated in this experience, kind of taking that culture on and coming under that, and then returning home. I have friends that talk about how the cereal aisle is overwhelming in Walmart, you know? Yeah. And so, because these things that were normal, now you've gone to X, Y, and Z place, you can't find Cap'n Crunch on the shelves. And so you figure out what that looks like. And so I think there's different levels of culture shock that have different effects too. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think culture shock. So let's break it down to this. I think that there are different types of trauma on mission experiences. One is physical trauma, where that's just what it is. You have some kind of ailment, something happens, everyone gets sick, whatever. And then you've got the trauma of when you come back, the trauma is when no one cares, everyone's apathetic about what's going on. And the third one is God is apathetic about what I just went through. And so if you break it into, I'm sure there's more, there are more learned people who could tell you more about this, but with those who aren't briefed well going in, they're the ones who come back and like, why is God allowing this to happen? Why is God so apathetic? Why did I go to this place and see this poverty and see this hurt and God isn't doing anything? Mm-hmm. Then you've got those who were briefed going in, they know what they're about to walk into, and they come back and they're trying to tell their story like, why does no one care what God is doing in this place? Why does no one care about the poverty? No one care about the hurt? No one care about the pain? And that's because you weren't debriefed coming back. Mm-hmm. You weren't expecting, oh, people are going to love your story, but they aren't going to have that shared experience that you have. And so you're not going to be able to relate those deep things in your heart to these other people. And so both of those ends are very traumatic for someone. And I think a lot of that, you're talking about the reverse culture shock, where you've gone into this impoverished community, you come home, you walk into Walmart, and everything is at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. You know, as a part of that debriefing, hey, you're going to experience these things when you get back. Hey, when the plane lands, you're going to feel this way. Hey, don't go eat a cheeseburger your first night. You know?
Yeah.
You will not feel good. You know, just certain things that you need to walk back into. Just like walking into the mission field, walking back into where you came from is just so very important. It's a big piece of the puzzle. And I think that's where a lot of people experience the reverse culture shock, because they weren't expecting it. They weren't told about it. Mm-hmm. And it becomes overwhelming. They just kind of cripple themselves mm-hmm. into self-isolation is a big one, or just the cry for why is everyone so apathetic? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that causes the reverse culture shock, is just not being prepared for it before you get back. Expecting people to be able to be on the same wavelength for you when you get back, and it's just not there. Mm-hmm. I think those are the hard parts of coming back.
Yeah, I agree. Because people will come up to you and they'll say, hey, how was your trip? And they really want to hear good or great, and then for you to be done talking. You know, they don't care about that person that you met, that you had this incredible encounter with, because they weren't there. They didn't mm-hmm. experience that. And so there is a disconnect of, hey, I experienced these depths and these people and X, Y, and Z, and I can't communicate that because someone didn't go to that place. They didn't experience that with you.
Right.
And so that is probably something that I've struggled with every single time. I remember coming home, and my parents had not gone to Romania, coming home from Romania the first time. And one, I thought that God didn't care about Romanians. And so I was thought that God was very apathetic to the suffering that was happening. And I also thought that when I came home, no one knew how to talk to me. And so I was really mad at everyone else. And so I had both sides of that. And you've walked that long road with me. But how do we come back? What are effective ways to use that experience? Because there is great power in being willing to tell those stories, but we have to tell them in effective ways that people actually hear the message behind it. They don't just check out with, oh, it was good or great. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are ways to use that experience? So your parents aren't like, or your friends, okay, when are you going to stop talking about this place? You know, like, what are some effective ways to communicate those when you get home?
No, that's a great question. I don't think I have a good answer for it. Because it's that experience that you had that no one else had, and you're trying to convey it in words. You know, anyone who has this committed life for Jesus, that has this definable moment where like God met me and now I'm different, you can explain that all you want to, but there's still something so deep in you. It says the Spirit knows the things of man, searches the ways of man. And so if, and it says the Spirit searches the ways of God. So if the thing that's touched the very depths of you has touched the very depths of God, there's a connection between you and the divine, right? Mm-hmm. And this experience in this one moment where you can explain, that's what that was in me. But you can't convey that to someone else who hasn't been there, who hasn't experienced that. So that's tough. It's tough to take any experience, put it in words, and show people. If you want to get just practical, pictures help. Yeah. Pictures and video. I think that's one of the greatest things people do. They go and they film what they're doing, or and they don't do it under the context of, look what I did. But it's more like, look what's happening. Mm-hmm. That's why the commercials on TV, the kid with the distended stomach, you're like, oh, that is terrible. Mm-hmm. There's something in you. He's like, I want to help that. Mm-hmm. Because you see it, you're experiencing it right there, even though it's thousands of miles away. It's on your screen in your face in the moment. And the moment you're face-to-face with the issue, it's hard to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
And it pulls something on you. And you have the option to ignore it, for sure. But you can no longer deny its existence mm-hmm. once you're made aware. And so that's I guess that's the only way I know. I don't have a good answer other than pictures help.
Yeah.
You know, aid to the story. You know, you can talk about this child you met, and then you can hold it up, but here's a picture of me and the kid, you know, mm-hmm. and like, oh, that's sweet. Now I have a face with your story, mm-hmm. right? So I think technology is a great way to get people more involved and more understanding and invite people. I think going on a mission trip is one of the greatest things. It sounds selfish that you could do for yourself. And it just opens you up. You know, we've taken people on different mission trips who've never been out of the country before, and then they go and now they want to go here and they want to go there and they want to go experience this and see these people and help out in this area. And it's just, I hear, I don't have tattoos, but here's the same thing. You get one, you're like, oh, I want another one now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of catch the bug of, and I don't like for people to become like serial mission trip people, or mm-hmm. that's what they do. That's their thing. I'm going to go here for a couple of weeks and probably mess up whatever that missionary has going on. And mess up what that missionary has going on, because that is selfish and that's not the kingdom of God at all. But I think when you can offer someone the experience of seeing for themselves, then they're more open to that calling and that voice and that peace that's been unlocked in them that was kind of shut away a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and even reinvigorate like the calling they have back home.
Mm-hmm.
So use technology, invite people, give people the opportunity to experience it. Use words when you can.
Yeah. So balancing that though, talking about, you know, the serial short-term mission goer, there might be a possibility of, you know, the white savior complex to come into that situation ways. So what are ways to make sure that what we are engaging in, and when we're talking about short-term missions, is actually helpful to the person that is leading and serving on the ground? Because obviously those trips are meant to encourage and love on who is in that day-to-day. So what are some steps that people should take, and maybe questions they should ask themselves before going to think about that?
Yeah. Don't impose. Don't go on a mission trip because you feel like this missionary needs your help. I would talk to them first. Because the truth is, the missionaries are doing just fine without you. And if you come, you're going to ruin what they got going on. It's like anytime you watch a DVD and you're looking at the extras, because people watch DVDs and look at the extras now. And there's always this disclaimer. It's like, the comments made here are not the comments of this company, right? And so every missionary probably feels like they have to do that when mm-hmm. they bring in somebody. Hey, what these people say doesn't mean that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the context, the people you're working with aren't going to relate that. But no, there's a book by, and I wish I could remember the exact author name and title, but it says, hey, maybe you're hurting. Maybe just raise the money and send it, and I can do more with it with my people than you can when you come. And you make the same bracelets that the team before you came and made for the mm-hmm. salvation story.
Painted their room for the fifth time this year.
Yeah, right? This house has a new roof, but I guess we'll put another one on it because that's what you came to do.
Yeah.
And so be creative in what you're bringing. Always have some level of evangelism that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? KP Yohannan. Was president of Gospel for Asia, founder of Gospel for Asia, and his message was, if all you're doing is giving a bowl of rice to a hungry child, you're just making him comfortable before he goes to hell. Mm. And that's a harsh, heavy reality. That if that's all you're doing, you're coming to paint houses, you're coming to do this, make a bracelet, and more power to you. I'm sure you feel good about it. but you haven't changed. You haven't taught a man to fish yet, yeah. Right? And so I think there should always be some level of evangelism involved in every mission trip. And it frustrates me to no end when a missionary has an itinerary agenda or gives you the idea of, like, we're going to go in this direction. These are what the people or the kids or whoever it is you're going to need. And you're like, well, we were actually thinking maybe we would do this instead. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. The other five teams that came before you felt the same way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We assume that we know the needs of other people in different places when really we have absolutely no idea what people need, you know? Let's flip it on the reverse side, as mm-hmm. a missionary that, let's say someone really does need a team, and maybe it's not, you know, a team of 20, 16-year-olds to come and do X, Y, and Z. Maybe they really have some needs for deep care. How can a missionary effectively communicate that, one, to their organization, their church, or whoever, and draw those boundary lines effectively?
Well, I'm not, and never have been, like, a long-term missionary by any means. Hopefully, whoever is coming has a leader who is open-minded about the ideas you have. And I know in my previous positions, missionaries we've gone to, we've kind of started with, well, what do you need? Do you even need us to come first? If we do, what do you need? What can we do to help? And then we always try to leave the missionary with something. And missionary care is a big thing in going to support the missionary, bringing them moments. They're worshiping in this culture and context that's been so different from their upbringing or what they even desire to have. And if you could bring that and give that to them a little bit, then they reach this place of, oh, that was refreshing, that's good. Mm-hmm. And bring something for them rather than expect things from them. But I think a lot of the organizations we would go to would have clearly laid out, these are the expectations for you, these are the expectations for your team. And anything outside of that, we need to really talk about. Mm. And so let them kind of, don't give them more work than they, you know, have put in for. They need to be focused on their people and not focused on babysitting.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that's a lot of times what happens. You can ask, what should a missionary do? Just be upfront, be honest. And I would love for missionaries to be honest, I really don't want you to come. Mm-hmm. I think right now is a bad time for us. And maybe be selective. Like, I don't think that your group of people would help, but maybe this other one would. Like, maybe teens isn't good. Maybe bring some adults.
You know?
Don't be afraid to say that. Yeah. Or maybe even say, don't bring some adults. They get uncomfortable and maybe do dumb things with their requests. Bring kids who don't care. I can't answer on behalf of the missionary, but I can just tell you maybe on behalf of the leader or the team, be flexible, be open, and stick to what they've kind of laid out.
Yeah, that's awesome. So thinking about long-term missionaries, a lot of them are dealing with their own, I'm just saying about families, and you know, they're dealing with their own personal relationships they're building and where they're living, or back at home, dealing with those, you know, families are complex, people are complex. And so everyone's dealing with their own stuff while also serving whatever group they're serving, whether that's at-risk children or whatever it is. And so what are some tools that they could put in their tool belt to potentially help equip them to deal with their own personal stuff while also serving others?
So I'm going to rephrase what you just said.
Go for it.
What are things, are you talking about on behalf of like the mission leader or the person going on long-term mission trips?
Yeah, someone serving long-term.
Mm-hmm. What are things that they can do to help take care of their junk mm-hmm. while still helping other people take care of theirs?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I think, like I said before, we're all flawed. We all need healing. That there's no one that stands inside perfection. We all stand outside of that. And we will all have raw moments. And we will all have our own thing always. And it's hard to answer, but I think for people who are going long-term, It's okay to take, you know, you're going to take your family if you're doing that. If you have one, you're going to take your family. You're going to take your baggage and you're going to go and you're going to establish yourself. You're going to be there. And it's not a short-term game. It's a marathon for you if you're a long-term missionary where you don't need certain things by the first month. Your first month is, let's get to know one person here. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can establish one relationship. And that may be the first 6 months and then it'll build. And so you'll find, I think, that your priorities will shift from the things that you were dealing with back at home to dealing with, well, I feel isolated. Mm-hmm. This isn't what I thought it was going to be. Unfortunately, a lot of people get that, but there's this, you know, even those that aren't debriefed or don't go to certain, you know, agencies, send people to schools to figure things out. But you get there and you realize, you know, I had this utopian idea of serving the kingdom and I'm very much alone and I very much miss this, very much miss that. And so your job is to be filled with the presence and spirit of God. And in that, you'll find even more grossness in yourself. Mm-hmm. But the good news is if you know it, you can fix it. That's like the primary goal of counseling. If you know what the issue is, take care of it. Like, if you know what's going on with your car, it's not going to run until you take care of that issue. Mm-hmm. You know what it is, fix it. And I know that when you're by yourself and you feel so alone, you feel so isolated, that's tough. And the good news is that God is the bridegroom. Like, and that is a relationship in which he's there to care for you and to protect you and overcome you and to take those things away. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not, you're not in a business. A missionary is never in a business relationship with the Lord. It's not, I'll do my part, you do your part. It is God has called you there. He's going to do 100% of the work. You're just the flesh that's embodying it at the moment that is offering the door. And so we will always have our issues that we have to take care of. And for some people, it depends on the individual. Some people need to be alone to connect. Some people need to be in crowds to connect. You know, the whole introvert versus extrovert thing. And so find how you refuel and go there. Find how you deal with things and go there. And then, you know, it's going to have to be within the context of the culture that you're in. Mm-hmm. Missionaries, unfortunately, are on call 24/7 and are some of the hardest working people you know. And often it goes unseen and unchecked. And if they aren't able to rejuvenate, that's probably where you find a lot of burnout, mm-hmm. Where they've given so much. And it's not out of selfishness that they burn out. It's just that after so long, your car doesn't have gas anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not going to move. So without refueling, you're going to have issues. That's a lot of like talking without specifics. And I realize that,
but that's, no, that's great.
It's different for each individual. I know that even so much as in like my marriage with my wife, I am super extroverted. She is super introverted and some we'll know when we're, when each of us has gotten to that agitated point, she'll look at me and be like, you need to go hang out with some people or something. And I'm like, thank you for recognizing that. I'm leaving. And then there'll be times where it's like, well, we met this person and we had dinner with these people and we went and saw these people and I'm feeling great. And my wife is like, I'm not gonna leave the house for 3 days. and that's okay too. And we recognize that in each other and we know what fuels each other and how to come together in those things. Which has caused us a lot of marital strife. So that's good that we recognize it. But I just know some Saturdays, one of us is not going to get out of our PJs and the other is going to be sitting there tapping their feet going, what are we doing today? And so you find within yourself what you need. And hopefully you get there before you get to the mission field. Mm-hmm. That you can recognize those areas where you get rejuvenated, you get refueled. And with technology, as long as the internet's working and you have an okay signal, you know, you can tap into a worship service across the globe, mm-hmm. and get that. You may not have the community you want, but you'll have the words and the message and the worship that you've been longing for. And I think those are good avenues that people can take. But if you're going to be all in, that means you got to figure it out for yourself, for your wife, for your husband, for your kids. And I think as long-term missionaries are there longer, they'll find that within the context of where they are, all these things will just translate, that they'll be able to raise their kids in that environment and be married in that environment. And they'll either learn to thrive or they'll come home. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with either.
Yeah. How do you know when, or what are some, I guess, signs you would say when you say, okay, maybe I should consider coming off the mission field?
when God tells you to. I don't know if there's another answer beyond that. Mm-hmm. I think God has many ways of speaking. I know in my life, God has spoken to me in many different ways. If the money's not there, then you can't afford to be there. Come mm-hmm. home, you know, and that's a terrible thing to say, but I remember I had a job in ministry, and I loved it so much. And I told the Lord, like, if you're asking me to leave, like, you're going to have to force me out because I don't want to. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to make it happen. And ultimately, yeah, that's kind of what happened, right? Mm-hmm. And so God is good, and God loves you, and God has prepared a place for you, whether it's here or there. And he's working on your behalf always, that he's never left you high and dry, and nothing is wasted. And the context in which you come home, it's okay. Whether it was hurtful, or you ran out of money, or it was your plan, or it just worked out. I'm afraid a lot of people come home in shame, not willing to tell their story of why they came home, because like it just didn't happen. It just didn't work mm-hmm. out. And anytime the gospel is presented, it doesn't return void. Like, there's no shame in that at all. In that, people will come home from long-term missions and have to walk through counseling or things, not because they're reentering, because of the way they left and had to. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate that they feel like they have to wear, they come back to the States and they have to wear this face of, like, I came home, it was my time. It was, but don't feel shame because of the way it worked out and the way it happened. Feel proud of what you did and how the Lord had moved and worked, and every seed planted grows, right? Yeah. I know it's tough to deal with your own stuff, but there's this level of grace that God extends to everyone that makes it all right for you to deal with your stuff and deal with everybody else's.
So how do we fight shame?
How do you fight shame? I think the hardest but best way to fight shame is just being truthful about it. Because it's so vulnerable. It just feels like you're just naked for everybody. You talk about your shame and your insecurities and the things that bother you. And I'm not saying broadcast. I think if every pastor in town started broadcasting the things they felt ashamed of, the problem with church is that there are people in it, right? And people aren't as gracious as the Lord is. And that's all I'll say about that part. But people aren't as gracious as the Lord is. And so find that space where you can open up and be vulnerable and get it off your chest and let someone love on you with the eyes of God and share with you, hey, your heart is okay and you're good. Mm-hmm. And that the shame you deal with, depending on the context, right, is just minuscule in the eyes of God. That it's just, he's taken it, he's not worried about it. And I think so many people hide under shame, and that's how we get this dissonance of this dichotomy of two different selves, where we're one person here and one person here. Mm-hmm. When we're alone, we're in shame. When we're out, we're having to hold the minister face. Mm-hmm. But if you have that option of exposing your shame, I think it feels better. I think you feel released. And you'll find that a lot of the other people are wearing the same face as you are. And they're like, oh, thank goodness someone said something. Someone once said, you cultivate a house of grace and truth will prevail. You cultivate a house of wrath and lies will be spoken. Mm. That's because when you're under that kingdom of wrath, no one's going to tell you the truth. Mm. They're all going to be scared. They're always going to be, well, you're going to judge me. I'm not going to say that. I can't do that. Or I need to hide this piece in me. But if you're living in a house of grace, and if I tell you the truth, your grace will extend to me and I'll extend it to you. And we're flawed people. This is what's happening, going on in who we are. Mm-hmm. And shame has a way of not being able to stand in light, because we're created for shame. We were created for life. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, a take on it.
Yeah. So coming from someone that was in ministry for a long, long time, how do you, one, avoid burnout by talking about these things, finding trusted people to go to, setting boundaries? What would you say to someone of how you avoid burnout?
How do you avoid burnout? That there has to be a disconnect in your identity between being defined by what you do and who you are, there and as a child of God. And if your identity is wrapped up in the ministry and in people depend on me, and if I don't do this, things will go crazy, and there is this crisis I need to work on, this issue, then you will absolutely dry up and burn out. And like we said earlier, get to that place where you can be refueled, because without it, you're just trudging away. Mm-hmm. There's only so long you can stand in the sun without getting dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to drink, you've got to find that well and go there and sit and be in the shade for a minute. Mm-hmm. And if it means disconnecting, then that may be what you need to do. The problem is, and so we try to put that cross culturally. And I know in some cultures, the minister is on call, the missionary is on call 24/7. And if you don't answer it, then someone feels betrayed. Mm-hmm. And so the ministry might need to be in, might need to shift from what I can do for you to what God is doing in you. Mm-hmm. And so refocusing, like, the crisis doesn't involve me. Like, I'm here for you and love you, but the crisis involves God and the forming of who you are. And that's easier said than done. And I think burnout is a real thing. We start to, you know, here in the States as ministers, we start to compare ourselves to others. We see our ministry versus their ministry and their budget versus our budget and what we can do and the people we have coming to our groups versus what they can do and the people they have coming to their groups. And we started to go into this performance mentality. If I do more and I do this, then I'll attain more and I'll get here and God will do this here and this. And we try to put strategies behind like the vision for God when it's God downloading vision. Mm-hmm. And your groups look different because they don't have what you've got in your people and you don't have what they have in their people. Mm-hmm. And if you were both the same, then there's a group of people who would be missing out. Mm-hmm. And if you did everything the same, then you wouldn't be grasping the people somewhere. And so we all are fit for where God has us. I think the moment we look back and all of our fears, we find that we were walking with him all along as that's what we were seeking. And so burnout, I think it takes place because we often have a performance mentality or we feel like we are the only answer. And as hard as it sounds, you're not the only answer. You're not even the right answer. And God's grace will extend past your failures as he has time and time again. And if you feel that your failure lies in you not doing more, then you're right. Your failure lies in everything you're doing right now. And so find that place, get refueled and refreshed, find the well and drink what you can. And then get back out there, Tiger, and do your thing.
That's awesome. That's really good. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add to this conversation as a whole, or any last thoughts?
Last thoughts. Man, I don't even know. We covered so much.
We did.
I really don't. I'm trying to, and I hope that's okay that I can say, no, I'm good.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today, Robert. I really appreciate it, and I know that everyone has a big nugget or several nuggets to take away from this conversation.
So. I'm sure everyone was totally inspired.
I'm sure they are.